Okay, sweetie, are you ready to do this?
I've been ready.
Okay. Reporting live from the beating heart of Nutmeg Country.
Cable actuated and opinionated.
This is Alt Bike Now.
Alternative radio.
For alternative cyclists.
I'm Ronnie Romance.
That's right.
Aria is in Portland via a live wire here. We got Aria. She's out in Portland. I hope the connection is strong so that everyone can hear. Talk to us a little bit, Aria.
Our connection is strong, but is the Morse code that I'm sending you?
Yeah. Is everyone hearing the Morse code?
That's a
no. I didn't hear any Morse code on that one.
Okay. Well, yeah, I'm in Portland for the next couple of weeks. Yeah. It's so hot here. It's like so dry and hot, but very nice in the shade. I'm parked right by Forest Park and just looking at these big trees. I'm here visiting my bestie who's going through a really rough patch in life right now. So I wanted to be here with her. Sorry I can't be there with you, but, you know, best friends come first.
And this is an alt bike friend, everyone.
Yep. It's Sal from Shovel Research, who lives in Portland. And it's been a beautiful day.
So I'd imagine we have a lot of listeners from Portland, Oregon, being that when I look at, you know, our analytics, which I do daily on our website, not really, we seem to have a lot of customers from Portland, Oregon. And that's no surprise, I suppose, because Portland, Oregon is, I would maybe not even unofficial at this point, the official bike town of the United States.
Yeah, I could see it.
Are you seeing a lot of people out and about?
Not so much, but surprisingly many for how hot it was yesterday. We went hiking at Powell Buttes, and I saw views of all these mountains all around. But they're like in 94 degree heat at 1 p.m. People were still riding their mountain bikes, like shirtless, climbing up. I was like, I can't believe it. So, yeah, not only is it the Rose City, it's also the Bike City. And it does feel really nice here. The food is so good.
Oh, my God. Sin City for me with the food. You just cannot let me loose in Portland. Well, when I do go, you know, Patrick and I basically start. Patrick, the other half of Ultra Dynamica, lives in Portland. And whenever I'm out there.
Your best friend.
Yeah, we have a lot of Portland connections. And whenever I'm out there, we use my visit as an excuse, not only to ride a bunch, but to, you know, go out to eat every single meal, essentially, and put it on the company card. That's basically why we started Ultra Dynamica. And oh my God, yeah, we go hard. We go hard when we're in Portland.
It's easy to. It's just a paradise for people like us. So I get it. I get it. Lucky y'all who live here. Easy to say in the summertime, I guess.
Yeah, the summer. Exactly. So, it's nice and dry and warm and sunny in the summertime. So, yeah, definitely seeing that at its best. Even at 94 degrees, Portland is it's pretty amazing.
It's the best. And, you know, it's super hazy today. I guess there was a big boat fire on the river yesterday. But anyway, I wanted to say thank you to all of the people that have been contributing to the pod.
And all the nice messages.
Yeah.
But, you know, money talks. Money talks.
Yep.
So we'll talk about you first. Yeah.
Since we've thanked Robert Prelo, Angela, we have had a flurry of contributors from Ruby Agatha, the Gateses, Kevin and Amanda, thank y'all. Dakota Graff,
shout out.
Oleski, Joe Carroll, John Watson. They said not the other John Watson, not Raleigh. and Sean Clark, thank y'all so much. Even though, you know, this hosting site like takes a good chunk. They take 15%. Patreon takes 10%. So
really, I didn't know that.
It's still a thing.
Okay.
Wow. You know, they want to do is.
Mm-hmm. Well, shout out to Dakota Graffin there. I just noticed that. That's one of the coffee people at Onyx. He travels the world doing cuppings in various places. And I just saw that he finished up a really amazing looking bike tour with our bags in Japan with one of his friends. So nice. Shout out to Dakota. Thank you.
Shout out to both the Gateses and all of their animals. And the other John Watson. Yeah. I was like, not that John. Moving on, another very important update is that we will be releasing this pod on Tuesdays instead of Mondays. Ronnie and I have just found that Mondays are just a little too hectic for us to be recording in the morning. It kind of sets us back a little bit in the day for work and catching up from the weekend. So hope it's okay for everyone to have this be released on Mardi Gras.
Mardi Gras. Tuesdays.
Fat Tuesdays.
Mardi Gras. You know, yeah,
Every Tuesday.
It's Fat Tuesday. Yeah, we have a lot of, especially being it's summer, it's a good problem to have. We've been very busy with orders and whatnot. And yeah, we've got a bunch of orders to fulfill every Monday, a lot of customer service to get into. So yeah, Mondays are a busy day. So I'm going to move this to a Tuesday recording as of next week. As of now, this is a Monday. So just a little bit later in the day since we're dealing with Portland West Coast time.
So tell your friends who, your thousands of friends who listen to this pod, millions of friends who listen to this pod, that we are going to Tuesday now.
Tuesdays. We're going to have a little bit different of a format this episode also, because we have so many listener mails from not just males. I'm looking at Aria right now. You're just glancing out the window.
Yeah.
Are you spacing out?
No, I was just looking away because of your males joke.
Fair enough. So yeah, Aria is going to kind of do like an interview format with me a little bit later on with our listener mails after we get through the headlines. So with that, should we get into said headlines?
It is really nice getting these questions in. Also, this is a democratic process and we really like mail and hearing people's opinions and voices on because we're opinionated, we respect other opinionated people.
Yeah, you got to. It comes with the territory.
Opinionated people have said they do not want to hear about pro road racing.
Go figure.
But we'll save it for the end. So if you're not somebody who's into the race side of things, apologies, and you can just turn us off at the end.
Yeah, right, right.
It is race season, it's Grand Tour season, so for us it is an exciting time, and we love it. And there are a few people who have said that they do like this aspect of it while still clutching on to their alt pearls.
There are storylines. I could recall somebody saying that as a proud unracer, I would rather not hear about pro cycling news. And I think I responded as a proud, proud previous unracer myself. I hope we can offer a balanced view of the two worlds, because they do intersect in many ways, much more than they used to. I feel like alt cycling has become, you know, people aren't just doing one, there's not just single discipline cyclists out there in the professional field now. These guys are doing all sorts of stuff. So anyway, we'll talk about that at the end. You don't have to worry about it now. Fair enough.
You don't have to worry.
We just like talking about it. That's why we talk about it. And that's why we started this podcast to begin with. We just wanted to, you know, talk about what we like talking about over coffee every morning. So
yeah.
I'm actually pretty excited that we're, even though you're traveling like this, this is just a really nice way for us to catch up. So
it really is, isn't it?
Yeah, 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 yeah. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate this. And I love seeing your beautiful face, obviously.
Aww. Seeing your apple cheeks.
Because you've been gone for a few days already. And I'm like, where You know, I'm just dragging through life here without you.
It is hard to sleep without having you close by.
Okay, enough of that, huh? This is what people like to get a room, folks. Well, like, we've got several.
Let's get into the headlines, gentles.
As many of you may be remembering from our previous episode, Leah Wilcox is out on her Around the World Faster project. She is currently, let me bring up her website here, theleahwilcox.net is information rich, let me tell you. They're doing a really cool thing with all of the sponsors, just putting the maps of each leg of the journey right there in front of you, along with each day and stop. She is currently 2 miles a day behind her current goal, but she has crossed all the way through the first part of North America. She'll finish in North America, but she's halfway through all of that because she's gone up through Canada and gotten to Nova Scotia and flown out. So she is in the air right now as we speak, headed to Portugal, where she will then get back on the bike. I'd imagine that she would get off the airplane and maybe someone's, I just picture somebody like waiting, like Rue waiting there with a bike at the airport. Just be like, get on. So that's my fantasy. So I guess Portugal, she'll be through that in like a half a day and into Spain, crossing Spain. I know they're having a heat wave in Europe right now. So hopefully that passes a little bit because it has been just as hot as it is in Portland there for you in Europe right now. So pretty wild. And Spain is not known for its mild climates this time of year. So best of luck to Lael. I wanted
it's
to bring
dry heat and it's a dry heat. Tucson,
she does. She does not like the dry heat, though. She likes she was saying the entire. I've been following along on Instagram. It's been some great videos being put up by Rue, but she likes a little bit more humidity. It's easier on her asthma. So
I thought it was a lung fungus.
Okay, she did have a lung. I mean, yeah, there were reports of a lung fungus. But I suppose the lung fungus can cause asthma. Yeah. I mean, when you are out and about, like sleeping in the dirt and just doing just these huge, huge trips like Lael does throughout a lifetime. Really, she's been at it for 15, 20 years now. Yeah, you do. You open yourself up to all sorts of lung funguses. I wanted to apologize to the current record holder because you refer to him just as quote unquote some dude. Say his name, Mark Beaumont. Scottish. You love Scottish people. No.
I sure do.
That's one of your favorite accents to emulate.
It really is.
Born in 1983. I mean, Mark Beaumont. I'm not up on these ultra endurance stuffs as much as I possibly should be to talk about it at any sort of
endurance is so old.
Yeah, it's very old, and I truthfully have not been following it. So you know, this route that Layla's doing has to be 18,000 miles long to constitute a Guinness Book of World Records, and this guy Mark Beaumont. Mark Beaumont from Scotland. He was born in 1983. How old does that make him now?
42.
Mark Beaumont, in 2008, he broke the standing record of 276 days by more than 2 months. So one would have considered this low-hanging fruit back then, I suppose, if you could beat a record by 2 months. And I believe he was not supported on this ride. And he beat this record by 2 months despite being involved in a collision and several bouts of dysentery. Say it with me now, folks. Dysentery.
Dysentery.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like my kind of ride, so to speak, but you know,
that's what killed U.S. President James Polk, everyone.
That's a good nugget of info there. Thank you. Now, all of this was put in a documentary that was released by the BBC called The Man Who Cycled Around the World. But then just so, you know, I guess the risk in, you know, putting all these records out there is that 2 years later, Vin Cox breaks the record again. Boy, oh boy. Can you imagine just sitting there after a journey, after your journey through dysentery that killed President James Polk? Okay. And you're sitting there on the couch and you hear this guy, Vin Cox, just beat your record and you got to do it again. Aye, aye, aye. So then 2017 rolls around. Mark was back. Okay. But he was inspired by the Jules Verne novel Around the World in 80 Days. So it's an arbitrary number in some ways. Okay. So, you know, this is, you're kind of just throwing numbers out there at this point and being like, well, I mean, if you thought about it, the last time he had tried 276 days and now he's trying for 80 days. Yeah. Supported this
Mark
time.
Mark Beaumont said, around the world in 80 days, let me try for 78.
Yeah, yeah, right. Let's try to beat 80. Let's try to beat it. So, yeah. So, yeah.
I think I can do it in 78. And then he raised $1 million and did it.
Yeah, yeah, true. So 80 days, inspired by the Jules Verne novel, this was fully supported, and he crossed Russia and I think stopped at the Great Wall of China and then had, you know, it's just got to reach this 18,000 mile mark, okay? And so he makes it in 78 days, 14 hours and 40 minutes, beating Vin Cox by 44 days. Take that, Vin Cox. So then Vin Cox is the guy sitting on the couch being like, God damn it. Am I going to do that again? I wonder. I don't know. Less information out there on Vin Cox. So,
yeah.
So Vin that's Diesel. The current. Yeah. No, not Vin Diesel. Right. Plenty of information out there on Vin Diesel. Boy, oh boy. Can you imagine Vin Diesel doing this? That would be something. That would get the world's attention. I live for this shit. That's what he would say.
I guess Vin Diesel's like a pretty big Magic the Gathering or like D&D nerd, which is very endearing.
Yeah, that is endearing. Diesel the D&D nerd, yeah.
And he was the voice of the Iron Giant, an animated short film that I love. Anyway,
well, we have this. I'm surprised not to get a little lol out of you out of my Vin Diesel quote, but.
You being sick in that hotel in Baja, California.
Yeah.
Triple
Oaks. and then they'd show a bunch of like
side quest story here.
Cars drive.
The Grand Depart with Whale.
Yeah, true. 2016, 10 years ago.
Got sick, and Ron was stuck in a hotel room for like a full day with just the Spanish-speaking TV as company, and he got advertisements for XXX, the Vin Diesel movie, like endlessly. And I got back to the hotel room to him just being like Triple Ooks over and over again in his delirium. It was very, very funny. You had to be there. Anyway.
But the one English quote that they said in that commercial was they had a bunch of cars like flying off bridges and it's just Vin Diesel like mid-flight. I live for this shit. Anyway, okay. Well, enough of Vin Diesel.
As all cyclers, we can relate to that.
We can relate.
Because we do, in fact, live for this shit.
Dysentery. I live for this shit. Live for this huge, giant shit I'm about to take.
To the other Vin.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Vin Cox. Back to Vin Cox. Okay. So, yeah, Vin Cox is old news by now. Lost his record by 44 days. The current record, 78 days, 14 hours, 40 minutes. That's what Lael's going after. We said in our last podcast, the record that Lael set for the women's record just last year or 2 years ago. Do you remember?
2 years ago,
how many days was that?
103 or 108.
So, you know, she's trying to shave off quite a bit of time here also. So, you know. I guess Mark Beaumont's sitting on that couch right now being like, I mean, he's got one part of him has got to be thrilled to see that somebody's going after his record. But I mean, having to ride 240 miles every single day on average. Good. I mean, and Lael is 2 miles behind each day on average so far, just about 10 days in. So we'll be following this closely, but I just wanted to give Mark Beaumont a good shout out here because, I mean, if you were on this very popular podcast, somebody just referenced you as some dude, but you had attempted twice to ride around the world and set records both times. Oh, he also attempted to set a record for like rowing across, I'm not going to say the Atlantic, but pretty dang close, and his boat capsized, and he survived that also. So this guy deserves some recognition. Not that he doesn't have it already, but in the alt cycling world. Hope we get to meet him someday.
I think Mark is well celebrated. And I know that he's
A commentator.
He's with Jenny Graham, who set the record Lael's 108 days is the current women's record.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
108 days, 12 hours, 12 minutes. Yeah, that's Lael. Mm-hmm.
Her ride so far has looked really rainy. I don't know if have you been following along on Instagram? Like it's looked pretty brutal, like highways. I guess that's just part of it. You're not riding like beautiful roads. You're trying to ride the flattest roads, which are always primary roads. You know, the flattest roads are always the roads that are the busiest because they engineer those roads to be the fastest way between point A and point B. And so that's basically what you got to do. So, I mean, if you see the footage of, I mean, you're just riding like a highway, you know, like a highway shoulder with a rumble strip, and there's just like semis in the rain just blazing by you all day long. I don't know. That's not for everyone. It's not for everyone, but that's how you break records. Okay. Well, on to our next bit of news.
Speaking of intense record-breaking things people are up to, the Tour Divide riders are 3 days into the race, 3 days, 4 hours, 22 minutes to be exact. There are 231 riders that I'm seeing on trackleaders.com/Tour Divide 26. There's 231 riders. Out of that, 25 are women, 3 non-binary riders, which is pretty cool, and there are 15 single speeders. Mm. And we talked about Bailey Newbury's bike last week and how I really liked it so much, and yeah, Bailey's killing it.
Mm-hmm. You've basically got to when you've packed that little.
It's pretty cool. I mean, single speed, you know.
Like, yeah, it's the single speed mentality is even simpler. Yeah. So yeah, it's much respect.
Pretty amazing. Yeah.
Much respect. I mean, I got a few messages on Instagram, at least, that a lot of people had looked at Rigs of the Tour Divide on bikepacking.com after our little rip right there. And yeah, I'm sorry you had to look at that, everybody. But, you know, I think it's worthwhile. You know, I was looking at on the bikepacking YouTube. There's a great video on all of the data that they were able to gather on Rigs of the Tour Divide. So how many like drop bar versus flat bar versus aero bar versus wheel size, tire size, like all this fun stuff. And of course, age was in there also. And overwhelmingly, the age group for the Grand Depart of the Tour Divide is like ages 50 to 70. And so, you know, a lot of these rigs are, I mean, when you're that age, you are a dad and you do not care. Am I right? Yeah, it's fair. So, I mean, fair enough. I don't think anyone's going for a look here, but you know, Rigs of the Tour Divide on bikepacking, it is out right now. If you want to take a look, the ones for this year's Tour Divide are up as opposed to last weekend. Just, I implore you to just go through there and try to find a bike that you'd like to ride. Just try.
Yeah.
Try.
You thought we were harsh.
Yeah.
Just take a look at what we're talking about.
Yeah,
yeah. You'll understand our passion.
You'll understand our passion. You'll understand our disdain. You will. And this very well may radicalize you. So, I mean,
podcast is how people become.
So we've been following along a few of our friends, namely my cousin, one of my cousins, Matt Engel. Shout out. Maybe he'll even listen to this. He's an engineer by trade. He's retired now and is able to do all this really cool stuff that I was able to do when I was retired before I actually, but my retirement was actually before I had a job. So we kind of switched places. He's a few years older than me, but yeah, he's out there. I'll click on him right now. Where is he?
Auntie Laura said that his goal was 37 days.
Yeah, I noticed.
So he's not.
Yeah, he's. It's just which is.
He's not trying to like race, but I. He might be trying to. Having met him, he might be trying to just use this as like recon, and then he might like properly race.
Yeah, knowing him, you know, yeah, and it's interesting. I always find it. You know, he also traveled. He also travels in a van in the off season and rides around the West and things like that. But, you know, we loosely grew up together, but we've kind of like found our passion in lives. And it's like the same thing. We're both living our perspective dreams, but but like our van compared to his van, like he's like all fucking decked out. And our van is just basically a tin can with a bed in it. And then his bikes are, you know, S works or it doesn't work. And we're just riding around. We're riding around, you know, the opposite aesthetic of all that. So he's very optimized. Tail fin, you know, lots of tail fin products. But he's out there doing it.
No beard,
short hair. Oh, yeah, no beard, short hair.
Same face. You do look like your brothers.
Yeah, I do. Like, yeah, we do look like we're brothers. He lives up in New Hampshire. I live down here in Connecticut. And I'm just clicking on him. He just crossed the border. Congratulations, right. Matt Engel. Just crossed the border. So he's doing great.
Yeah.
Yeah, 363 miles in. So if you're listening to this, Matt, shout out, cuz. Keep it going. We're watching. Another shout out we wanted to give was Riley Osgood.
Yeah.
Right?
Who also crossed the border yesterday.
Okay, so he's ahead of my cousin.
Yeah, yeah. I think when I was doing it, I had crossed the border like on day 3 as well.
They should really, in track leaders, they should really just put up a big aria so that everyone can follow where you were on this route.
I know. Why don't I have a little star? My performance was legendary.
Legendary. So Riley had a little feature on bikepacking last week, I think, of a specialized chisel build with a carrot ice in the front, I think. It's as far as Rigs of the Tour Divide goes, it's one of the, I mean, I didn't really see any better looking ones other than Bailey's.
Yeah, Bailey's is.
Truthfully, I didn't look through all of them. I just couldn't. I couldn't stomach it. But I'm already radicalized. I didn't need to. Yeah.
It's okay. I understand.
So, yeah, way to go, Bailey. I mean, sorry. Yeah, definitely way to go, Bailey, but way to go, Riley, also.
Yeah, keep pedaling. I'm impressed at the list of women that are here too. There's someone from Japan, woman Onigiri. Wait, is that no? Someone is. I don't know if that's a real name.
There's a lot of tomfoolery going on with these track leaders, I'm sure.
Yeah, because someone's name is like, my kitten is whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Someone's name.
Yeah.
But we'll see.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when you've been. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, I think to end this little segment, it's a fast course. I hear they had a little bit of rain the first day, but it's been dry and speedy and the winds have been favorable. There's a little smoke in New Mexico right now, but everything looks pretty good. So we are on pace, I think, for the men's and women's for record breaking paces. Are on pace for record breaking paces.
I'm seeing that on track leaders, but what's worrying me a little bit is everyone is smack dab in the middle of grizzly country right now.
Oh my goodness. Correct. Yeah. And I mean, the 2021, the first year that you attempted, wasn't there like somebody who was at a spot like days after you got eaten by a grizzly bear, like dragged out of her tent.
Yeah, yeah. It was really sad. She was, granted, she was told that, and, you know, an extremely experienced bikepacker and had done this section before, and you just never know. She was close to Ovando, I want to say,
yeah,
in Montana, and was camped kind of close to, like, I want to say the post office, like, thing that everyone camps in when they're cold and hungry and tired. And yeah, got dragged out by a bear, like, while she was inside her tent.
Which is kind of the worst nightmare.
Like, not only does the human perish, they have to kill the bear, too. Mm, so yeah. It's just not a good situation. So I really hope everybody stays safe. And
I've always found like, singing out loud through bear country is, you just got to make a lot of noise out there. It can get very scary, because it is. I mean, you're going to see bears. That's straight up bear country. Like, that's where they are, grizzlies.
Mm-hmm. And it's so, their land. Yeah.
It's their land. And so in Montana alone, just this month, I guess there's been three documented attacks already, and already a death.
Oh, yikes.
Already a death. And people are saying out on the course that they're seeing more bears than usual. So,
They're hungry.
Yeah, no, you know, they're stressed and hungry. So it's, you know, kind of unnerving. But that'll keep you going at night, won't it?
Oh, yeah.
keep you riding at night.
For sure.
Yeah. So yes, best of luck. You need a little more than luck, I suppose, with bears. But, you know, hope everyone's out there being safe. And singing the top of their lungs through the more sketchy sections of bear country. And you see, start seeing a lot of scat on the trails. And you hear some, like, you've been there.
Yep.
All right. Well, shall we move on to the next? We're going to move on to, so Brooks of England, not Brooks Running Shoes or Brooks Brothers. These are reasons why Brooks can't do clothing or shoes, because of the Brooks Brothers and Brooks Running Shoe trademarks. I always find that to be interesting, even though Brooks is a 137-year-old company. Of course, Brooks was, I call, like, Brooks synonymous with alt cycling. Like, I find, like, the Brooks saddle, namely the B17, which is their most classic shape, to be the saddle of alt cycling. This saddle changed my life. It got me off of, 15 plus years ago, it got me off of, like, pure race saddles, such as the Flight Titanium that I had ridden for, I guess, 20 plus years prior. I make a joke that my anatomy developed in puberty around the Flight Titanium. And so I switched to the Brooks B17 right as I was getting into bike touring more and out and riding in, like, normal clothing, as I was being radicalized by Grant Peterson in the late aughts. And at that point, it was really, those were the only places he really saw Brooks saddles were on Rivendells or classic bikes. They hadn't really, the Cambium, that's their kind of a rubber saddle, vegan saddle, I guess, has been a great success for them. Hadn't been released yet at that point. But, they were bought out by Sella Royale Group, which does Physique and Crank Brothers and maybe Sella Italia. I can't confirm that. But they were bought out by them in 2002. Okay. And if you've been watching the internet at all this week, you may have seen the kind of trickle, I guess the past few weeks, a trickle out of this, what they've been espousing as a new saddle. And I think they got people pretty excited for a new saddle whenever you say something is new. But sorry to say, folks, it's just a B17 with different leather. I was given
the utmost importance.
Of the utmost. It's called the B17 Champion Utmost. Great name, right? I mean, maybe a little bit redundant, but I'm all about redundancy when it's words like that. And
very English.
Now, this saddle was given to me. I wasn't allowed to like take any photos of it or anything, but they gave it to me, I want to say like the last fall, to kind of get broken in. And then they had me out to Arizona to do a little like video shoot and photo shoot with the saddle last spring, early spring. I guess that wasn't early spring. That was winter. So, you know, I was like,
wait, I should add a side note. We are not sponsored by Brooks at all. Ronnie just models for them sometimes because he's such a simp for them. Okay,
come on, sweetie. I have a spiritual connection to the brand because of what it's done for me. And I have, as you may have heard me reference in a previous podcast, that I have urethra problems. And I had my first surgery to remove urethral strictures when I was 17 years old from blunt impacts of my flight titanium when I was a teenager. And I've had three surgeries since. They just have to basically laser out the scar tissue every 10 years. And so the Brooks B17 made it so that I can comfortably ride a bicycle, you know, in ways that were impossible for me before learning about a hammocked leather saddle and how comfortable that could be. I started commuting on them, and then I realized, oh, you don't even need a chamois with these. Then, you know, that's why they're so alt bike, is because they just require such little thought into, you know, you're able to just grab your bike and go ride, and you just can't do that with a modern hard plastic shelled with foam on top saddle. And so I also love the tradition of the brand. I love the shape of the B17. I love the look of it. It's just a beautiful saddle. It's timeless. There's a reason why they've been around for that long. Now, in recent years, the leather on the B17 has taken a huge nosedive. And it's just, I mean, I've found, you know, basically a rule of thumb, especially if you're just getting into leather saddles here. The rule of thumb is like, if you get a leather saddle and it breaks in quickly and easily, that means it's going to basically wear out in a year or two. And it's unfortunate because, you know, you think you're purchasing this lifelong investment that is going to mold to your sit bones, because that's what these leather hammock style saddles do. And you get real excited because this saddle is the most comfortable thing you've ever ridden for a few hundred miles. And then all of a sudden it starts hammocking out a little bit more than what you'd like. And you have to tighten the tensioning bolt. And before you know it, a year and a half later, you've got a saddle with the tensioning bolt all the way stretched out. The saddle's inches longer than it was when you got it the year before. And you got to like pull a Grant Peterson, shove a bunch of foam under there in order to save the thing. And they look terrible when they've hammocked out like that too. So I just don't, you know, the last, three or four B17s I feel like I've had, even the titanium ones, have just stretched out in like a year. Forget about it. If you get them wet, they're over, you know, they'll stretch out that day. So, you know, this B17 Utmost, this new one, I guess if anything, you want to say what's new about this saddle is that it has a thicker, more longer break-in period for the leather. And that's a good thing. It's going to be really uncomfortable. That's the downside for the first 300-400 miles even, but it's going to gradually break in. And I can already tell that the leather on that saddle is really, really nice, and it's going to last a really long time. So the other thing that they changed, or another reason why perhaps that they decided to call it new, is that it has tubular stainless steel rails now, and there's like a laser cut like stainless steel, which I don't like very much. It's kind of garish. The back of the saddle says Brooks and like this laser cut like stainless steel thing. And of course, it's got the hand hammered copper rivets. Great looking saddle, natural veg tan leather. All their saddles, I think, are veg tan, but this is like a natural veg tan. So it's just like what the leather would look like. Matches tan wall tires really, really well. So, you know, I don't know why that we're calling this like a new saddle. It is just a B17. I think that they should just, in my opinion, I guess another weird why I get so passionate about Brooks is that I feel like I could run this brand. I know exactly what Brooks needs. So like, I just get like on my high horse about them, and I just get kind of butthurt that they don't ask me for more of my insight. I will like toot my own horn here. I don't think that there is another rider out there in this world that is a more visible Brooks rider than myself, nor has more experience with the whole lineup. So, you know, if you have any questions about saddles, just give me an email. I love to talk about them. I've since moved on.
He sure does.
I've since moved on to other saddles, you know, like the French company Giles Bertund, of course, Cycles Ideale, another French company. Those are very expensive. The Bertunds were expensive, but this new Brooks Utmost is about the same price as a Giles Bertund. And I prefer titanium rails because they flex more, they're more comfortable, they're lighter. And so I'm not really down with the stainless steel construction of the Utmost. I just think it should be titanium if you're going to make an expensive saddle. And I had prices written down here somewhere along with, oh yes, let me grab an envelope. Oops. Okay. Okay, yeah, I wrote this down on the back of an envelope. The Bertund Aerovist, okay, that's their titanium, kind of like somewhat comparable to a B17. B17s are better for more upright riding, where I would say the Bertund Aerovist tie is better for having your handlebars a little bit lower than your saddle. Makes a big difference. So, you know, I still think the Brooks B17 tie is the nicest, most comfortable saddle. Like, that's what I do prefer on most of my bikes. But on my faster bikes, I tend to put the Aerovist. And so the Bertund Aerovist, with its natural veg-tan leather, nice and thick, takes a long time to break in. It's a beautiful saddle, very well made. $339 at 440 grams. Okay. The Brooks B17 tie, which is what I like to ride on most all of my bikes, it's got to be titanium. I don't mess around with the standard Brooks. I mean, you got to have at least the champion or special. They call that special, where they have the hand hammered copper rivets. So the Brooks B17 tie, $300, 425 grams. Okay. So that's still winning here. Now the Brooks Utmost is also $300, so same price as the B17 tie, but it weighs about 40 grams more. Okay. Nicer leather, though, so maybe the leather weighs a little more. The Brooks Basic, 528 grams. Don't even mess with that, folks. That Brooks Basic, like, put that on your heaviest riv, but that's it. Like, that saddle weighs three times easily as much as, you know, a modern, you know, race-inspired saddle. Of course, comfort is very important, but I just can't give up grams like that anymore. So, you know, take it as you will. I still do think that this new saddle, I just think they could have marketed it a little differently. I just think that all of their saddles should be nice leather like that. But, you know, if you want something a little nicer offering from Brooks, try the Utmost. I think you might like it. Well, I could go on and on and on about saddles. And you know what? I wanted to give a shout out to both Whaler of Roly Poly Coffee, Whaler Taylor, and Pitour of Dear Susan, because they were the ones featured in all of those Brooks videos leading up here, and they were fun to watch. Really liked those two. So, fun little videos, liking old things that are new, and so forth. Yeah, I'm just watching you, like, fix your hair.
Yep.
I need you to stay engaged with me. If I'm just going on and on about saddles and I just see you like picking your nose. That's what I think all of our listeners are doing too. I need this confidence.
You know you're the saddle expert.
Yeah, I've lost it. to sum it all up, I know the Utmost, they only have like maybe 500 of these. It's a limited edition thing. I don't know how fast they're going to sell, but at $300, really not that bad for a saddle of that quality, honestly. I thought they were going to be more expensive. So I would put the Utmost on any of my upright bikes because the titanium railed ones, especially in the honey and brown, are really hard to come by right now. So yeah, I would put the Utmost on any of my you know, upright builds, but I'm not too concerned about the weight on, which is less and less these days. I am a weight weenie. Card carrying.
Yep. I blame the road race watching.
Yeah. Well, you know, road racing is all about aerodynamics now. Like gram counting was something of my road racing era. So maybe I'm just nostalgic for the gram counting of the aughts.
Maybe. Yeah. I just feel like they mastered the gram counting and they needed something else to focus on. And well, then they brought in the aero stuff.
But, sorry to talk about road racing this early in the podcast, folks. But yeah, the UCI put
a... probably a good time to stop talking about that altogether and get into the next segment. We're
going to
do readers' questions.
Because... readers' questions!
Thank you for those sound effects. You really are a master at that. Okay, so we have someone who asked if... I'm going to get right into it, okay, Janie?
And where can listeners write in for their reader questions or listener questions?
It's in the show notes. Okay. You can say like write a fan mail or like ask a question.
It doesn't seem like people have been having a hard time finding it, but yeah, if you have one, send it this way rather than emailing it to us, because I know I had a few emailed to me, but it's kind of hard to search for it in the email. Whereas this, we could just click a button and they're all there.
Yeah. It keeps all we both have ADD and it's nice when all of the pod related questions go into one bucket. So it is best to use that link. It's like a Buzzsprout link. So we're going to get better at this. But they ask Janie, because this is a nice segue from your saddle TED talk there.
We're still sniffing saddles, just, folks. Still sniffing saddles. Simping. Yeah.
For a really good reason, though. Like, it's good to know why you like it so much. Like, so I appreciate you explaining that, because I'm sure other people have issues with their undercarriage as well. But someone is asking, would you say saddles make or break a bike? And I think they were talking about in context of, like, looks
Yeah.
and feel.
Yeah. Yeah, saddles being perhaps your most important contact point on the bike as far as feel. We'll get into feel first. Saddle, I mean, if you're not comfortable on your saddle, you're not going to have a comfortable – I mean, you're not going to get into riding. You're just going to – you hear about that. I mean, what is it? That's the most common complaint out of a layman out there, a civilian, when you say you're at a family gathering and they're like, I like riding bikes too, but I just can't sit on that saddle. I've got a gel cover and it just doesn't work. And you know, we have to hold our tongues and be like, was it that meme being like that the guy with his head about to pop being like, if they only knew how much I know about Brooke saddles and I want to tell them everything right now. So that's me. And yeah, you know, it's a lot of people don't like to put on the Lycra, the spandex and the padded shorts and everything. They just want to go out and ride their bikes in their gym shorts or whatever, or their cutoff Daisy Dukes, me. And so not that those aren't my gym shorts also, but so it's, you know, and saddle. And of course, undercarriages are extremely personal. You know, it's not only your undercarriage, but it's also a lot. They're all different. And so I always tell people to start with a leather saddle, a leather hammocked saddle, so that they could put in the time on it and break it into their sit bones. And it unlike a more standard saddle, the leather saddles form to your sit bones. Like, it becomes personalized to you. So as far as comfort goes, absolutely. You know, if you're on a bad saddle and it's treating you wrong, you know, that whole experience is tainted. Get it? Tainted. Yep. So as far as looks go, even more so. Like, I will ride an uncomfortable saddle just for the look. Okay. The Flight Titanium is the most beautiful saddle, perhaps one of the most beautiful bicycle products ever created. Hands down. Full stop.
Wow. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Period.
Big claim there.
Big period. Full stops. all that stuff. It's just, you just cannot deny. The Flight Titanium, the lines of the Flight Titanium, even the box. It's just, it's, I collect Flight Titaniums, and oftentimes I just leave them in the box. I have just Flight Titanium boxes littered around the barn. These things, I guess, being from my era of early 90s mountain bikes, Tinker Juarez famously rode a Flight Titanium, pushed all the way forward on the saddle rails with seemingly like 2 feet of C-post. And that's what I did. I had no one to tell me otherwise. I did that on my bike way too high, and that's what essentially crushed my urethra. But that saddle looked so good that I had to keep riding it. And nowadays, I am able to stand a flight as long as my handlebars are low enough and you're not putting a bunch of weight on the back. You know, there's a balancing act here with your saddle. You know, you're a lot of people think like, oh, I've got to be completely upright. Well, you have to, if you're going to be completely upright, you got to have a wider saddle to support all that extra weight that's being put on the saddle. It's got to go somewhere. If you're taking the weight off of the handlebars, it's going directly to the saddle. So, you know, so if you're putting the handlebar down lower, well, more weight is going on your hands and less on your saddle. So you can ride a skinnier, you know, less, more racy saddle. That's just how it works, folks. It's not just a upright bikes are always more comfortable. That's a fallacy. You know, it's all about balancing between your handlebars and your saddle. Now, you know, if you're going to choose, there's a lot of like ugly ass saddles out there that I honestly don't know why people go ahead and do, because you could have like I saw this at Bespoke in the UK. One of my favorite bikes, I won't name any names. One of my favorite bikes at that show was perfect. Like no notes except for, I don't know what saddle it had on there, but it had like a saddle that just ruined the whole bike. Like I was like, I can't look at this. Like especially if you're going to bring it to a show, like even if that's your personal preference, you know, reserve that for your personal rides when no one's going to see it. Or if you're on a group ride, don't stand up, you know, honestly, you know, so you're going to, you know, so yeah, I guess that answers that question. I mean, it can make or break a bike. I thought my saddle for the past 2 years have been Flight Titaniums for my show bikes. I had one on the first Evu, the red one. I had that Valentino red Flight Titanium, very rare. Last year on my CR1, I had a zebra print Flight Titanium TT, which is even less padding. And I have, those two bikes were built from those saddles. Like those were the first pieces that I got of the build, and those builds were entirely imagined around those saddles. So, you know, saddles are important, not just for comfort, but for looks. So you gotta talk about these things, especially, you know, if you're like living in a city and you're parking these things like in a, you know, outside Whole Foods or whatever. I don't know. You know, you're just going to leave.
Local
co-op. If you're parking these things outside your local co-op, people are sniffing. People be out there sniffing, you know? So, you know, think about that. You're putting yourself out in the world. You want to put on your best face. And sometimes your best face is your best saddle.
Sometimes your best face is on your ass.
One last thing I'll say about leather saddles, the cutouts, the carves, as Brooks calls them, you're able to do a cutout on a, like a Giles Bertoon with the thicker leather, but on the thinner leather of the Brooks in the last decade, at least, those saddles will wear out in like 6 months, honestly. Like it's, cause there's less leather there. So it offers more stretch, very comfortable in the beginning, but that's why I don't ride the cutout saddles, is because they're comfortable for a little bit, but they just wear out way too quickly. So if I'm doing a cutout, I go for like the, you know, one of the cambiums with the cutout. I find those to be pretty nice.
Sure. I've had a lot of great experiences with the cutouts.
Yes. A lighter rider. That would be the exception. If you're a lighter rider around 100 pounds, you're not going to have many issues with your saddle stretching out.
Yeah. I'm 110, 5'2". For reference. So it really makes a really big difference for me, and knock on whatever wood I have near me, I've never gotten a saddle sore. I think the cutout also makes it makes like the leather saddle even more breathable. I don't know if that's science how it feels, but it does feel quite nice. Like I wouldn't wear a chamois, you know, if I had the cutout.
You use the B-17, the B-17S, the short-nosed with the cutout.
The short-nosed, I definitely need the short-nosed.
At 110 pounds, you are not any Brooks saddle, you will not wear it out. I'm talking about, I'm 175 pounds. You know, if you're up there, you know, your saddle's going to wear out quick.
Get a more robust saddle.
Yeah, get something more robust.
And if you're like me, it's just going to take so long to break that in that it is going to hurt.
That's right. I put that short-nosed Aravist or whatever they call the short. I think they call that the Bertund short-nosed, the cork one on your, and how long that's taken way too long for you to break in, right?
Yeah. It took a while, probably like 2 years.
So you'd have that same problem on the utmost also on the new Brooks saddle. Mm-hmm. It's just, so that's, you know, that is the trade-off. I think they may have made their leather thinner just to make the break-in period less arduous, but the trade-off being that it's for heavier riders. I don't think I'm heavy, but yeah, not going to last as long. Okay.
Good,
I think we answered that question.
Thank you for that question answer. So the next question is, how do we feel about cargo bikes and are cargo bikes alt? This question comes from Bristol, Tennessee, from John W.
The other John Watson. Mm-hmm. Interestingly enough, the John Watson, very much into cargo bikes, just got one that he'd brought back with him from Bespoke in the UK. And I don't think I've ever ridden like a dedicated cargo bike other than the Crust Clydesdale Fork. I had a Crust Clydesdale Fork Darren Larkin designed. Right when Crust started selling those, we got one. And I remember I put like a big bucket on the front and I used to ride you around in the bucket.
Yep.
Along with my nephews.
Nephew who is now taller than me.
Yeah.
Used to fit in that bucket.
And what else would I use it for? I think I took it on a few like local camp trips and it was cool to just to like throw cast iron pans in there and like all this other shit.
We also did order fulfillment with
Yes, that's right.
Like we were just doing t-shirts for Poppy's Public Restroom and Pizza.
Oh, man.
That was the first business name.
Oh, my God. Hold on a moment. This is breaking news, folks. Matt Engel, my cousin, just texted me. Well, I broke my rear rim on day 3, 30 miles from civilization. Today was quite the hike. Oh, no. Well, I'll text him back. Hold on. We're running a podcast here.
Oh, man, that's rough because he is in a really tough part of the route.
Well, at least he is in America again.
I guess so.
So you don't have to pay
Canadians. Canadians.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Okay, well, side note, I just thought that was great to have a live update right here.
Oh, no.
He's doing pretty good. So he hiked for 30 miles yesterday, apparently. Well, Matt.
Yikes. That's a rough section.
Rough section indeed. But that's what you're doing. That's what you're out there doing. I think that's why.
That's
part of it. Okay. Where were we in these listener questions? I'm sorry to interject like that.
Yeah, I think cargo bikes are very alt, especially working off of the definition of alt bike being more like holistic
lifestyle,
life and incorporating the bicycle into, you know, not just travel or exercise, but also like everyday things that you like, you need to do, going to the grocery store, picking up your kids, you know, hauling whatever you need to haul from one part of town to another. I totally feel that cargo bikes are alt. I mean, we, like, when I lived in Boston, we had huge trailers just filled with food for Food Not Bombs that were built on cart. Like, you know, it was rudimentary cargo style. It's not like electric cargo or whatever. But I think all of that combined makes cargo bikes totes alt.
Totes alt. I'm thinking back to the release of the Extra Cycle. This is when I was finishing college. I got an Extra Cycle in 2003. And Rob Roop, who, shout out Rob Roop from one of the extras on Rad, the BMX, early 80s BMX movie, was a bike mechanic at Durango Cyclery, and he was able to wheelie one. And yeah, so he got a free Extra Cycle from Extra Cycle because at Interbike that year he was able to wheelie one, and so then he sold it to me, and then I took it on my first ever bike tour, and I loaded I just loaded trash bags full of clothing and put on a Tupperware container on the top of it and put a bunch of CD books in that Tupperware container. And I lost, it was a 50 CD case Logic. I lost it somewhere in Missouri, fell off the back. And was,
if anyone in Missouri could please look for that case Logic, we'd appreciate it.
So, you know,
really like all of those Hot Water Music CDs back. It's
true. It was all hot. Well, my entire collection I've since. So yeah, definitely all. It's cool. You see them a lot more in Europe. You don't see where we live. We don't live in an urban area at all. I think a cargo bike would really suit us very well around here. But Troy has got a great, our Ultra Dynamico shipper, Troy has a Extra Cycle cargo bike that he's painted yellow and turned into a power loader. It has like cat power loader stickers all over it. I think it's sweet.
Like the caterpillar theme. Yeah. It's really good.
And so he brings, you know, the Ultra Dynamico tires to the post office that way. So, you know, we're using them around here, just not as much as more urban areas where they really do make sense, where they replace your car entirely. All about it. All about it. Okay. Next one.
Yeah. So this is actually a good segue for the people looking for your CD book in Missouri. Someone asked, any thoughts on the band The Mars Volta? They weren't old enough to like cool music or go to concerts in the early 2000s because they were about 4 to 12 years old. So I'm wondering if you had any Mars Volta CDs in that case Logic.
Yeah, you know, I was there for that. And yeah, I was a big At the Drive-In fan. Big At the Drive-In fan. And I know most of my friends were also big At the Drive-In fans, being from Texas. I'm not from Texas, but all of my adult friends that I met in Colorado were from Texas. And then I moved to Texas after that because I was just in this Texas sphere. Of course, At the Drive-In being from Texas, also Mars Volta being from Texas, being from, it's not coming to me now, not Las Cruces, that's New Mexico. What the heck? Come on, it's it to me. Give it to me. Border, Texas border town.
Texarkana?
It's just not a border town. I can't believe I can't remember this. El Paso. El Paso. Texarkana? El Paso band. So I did not ever see Mars Volta play live. I was one of the people in the split. So after At the Drive-In got real popular, even Lenny Kravitz called them his favorite band.
Oh, wow.
Right? If Lenny Kravitz even acknowledged, I would jizz my pants immediately. I don't think that, I mean, we got to talk about hot guys every podcast. Lenny Kravitz, one of the hottest there ever was and ever will be, ever is. I mean, have you seen his workout routine?
No, but I've seen his ding dong falling out.
Yeah. Look that one up, folks. Yeah.
So, I think a young Javier Bardem for me.
Okay. Well, I'm sticking with Lenny Kravitz, and I don't know why we're even talking about
young
him right
Javier
now.
Bardem.
So, yeah, At the Drive-In, super popular. Then, of course, any kind of like, you know, 90s alt band that gets super popular has got to just break up and exit or have one of their members commit suicide, something like that. You know, it's just part of the whole thing. So luckily, no suicide here. They just broke up and formed two other bands. Mars Volta is one of them, and Sparta was the other. And so the big question, I think, around a lot of campfires of people my age is, who'd you go with? You don't even have to say at the drive-in, because it's just acknowledged that we were all at the drive-in fans. You just say Mars Volta or Sparta. I'm going to say, you know, it's an unpopular opinion because Mars Volta is obviously the cooler of the two, but I'm Sparta all the way, baby. So Mars Volta, too weird for me. Just didn't get it. That first Sparta, okay. That first Sparta record, I think even the second one, fucking good, really good. So that's me.
Yeah, I think around that time I was like listening to probably like Jimmy Eat World or something. Maybe the Blue Album from Weezer was on heavy rotation at the time.
You were so
Operation Ivy.
So were you so Blue Album? Weezer, that's another question. You go blue or green? Are you Blue Album or are you Pinkerton? And I'm telling you right now, it's the cooler thing to say is Pinkerton, but I'm blue all the way. So
I think
one of the best albums of all time.
I would have said Pinkerton, but having listened to the Blue Album somewhat recently, I'm like, wow,
no,
like Beyonce's Lemonade. Like, it is too good. Mm-hmm. I think I also liked at the time, you know, like Dashboard Confessional.
These are all the sappiest odd stuff.
So, Alkaline Trio.
Yeah, Alkaline Trio. It's a tough call for me too. If I wasn't interested, so I always came from a very like male dominated scene of cycling and hardcore.
And, oh, you don't say.
You know, so I was never like I didn't have girlfriends because there were never any there. And or they're, you know, or if they were, they were very content that it was there. There's a lot of guys and only a few women. That's been my life. And so it's like, you know, I think maybe we started listening to these like softer, you know, who would say maybe we like Dashboard in hopes of maybe attracting somebody.
You wish that you were anywhere with
anyone.
Making it.
Exactly. But you know, but wholeheartedly, especially at that time, like less hardcore was more my early high school years, and then I got more and more and more into metal and death metal, Swedish death metal, you know, Scandinavian black metal. But you know, I say like, you know, melodic Swedish death metal was my favorite music at that time when Mars Volta was coming out. So that's what I was listening to primarily. Nowadays, again, I really like that band Slowmosa. I talked about them earlier on, and I just listened to this. I was watching KXPK, whatever, you know what I'm talking about? Those live performances.
W-K-Y-Jelly.
Yeah. Those live performances that are on YouTube. And I just caught this band Agriculture. Holy shit. I was super impressed by that, but it's kind of like very experimental black metal rock. They throw like every single genre into one, and it not often that is a disaster, but it came out real nice. But you know, I like some slow, like sludgy, atmospheric shoegaze type stuff nowadays. That's what I'm into. But so
yeah,
favorite band, Agalloch, probably. Favorite album, probably, I don't even know how to say it, Aviatic Songs by Ohm. I could listen to that album over and over and over and over again. Mm-hmm. Opeth, another one of my favorite bands, not their newer stuff, I like their early stuff. And of course, you know, yeah, we'll talk about music more on this podcast, I'm sure. The two of us love Rumors. That's what we used to listen to. Around the Fire, when we were touring together, I used to love when we would just put on that album, Fleetwood Mac Rumors, around any campfire anywhere in the desert while we were bike touring, and start making our meals around the campfire. And I just have such... Daddy's so strong. You had to be there. Okay, well, so I hope that answers that question.
I'm more all over the place with my musical taste. Like, it's up to my mood. I like hip-hop and R&B, you know. I like I like some folk, doom folk. I like folk punk. I like bluegrass. You know, it's all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Whatever sounds good to my ears. Right now, I know that Sally's been listening to Wet Leg and Mannequin Pussy, and I really like, because of my friend Cheech and Molly. I really like Paramore.
Don't forget Coheed and Cambria.
Rock and roll is the future. So, okay, that we'll put a cap on that. Mm-hmm. To get back into bikes from music, someone asked, how do you recommend building the skill of reading, like, the geometry on a bike, like how the angles and lengths on a geo chart translate to how that bike would ride and feel, like, performance-wise? Mm. And that's definitely a question for you, because I don't know. I can't tell.
That's a great question. That's a deep, deep head question right there. You know, a lot of people speak about geometry as if they know what they're talking about, and I don't think many people, I think it's a secret of a lot of riders out there that they don't actually know what they're talking about, because there is so much.
Are you one of them?
I have been. I really, you know, it wasn't really until about, I guess like 10 years ago that I guess that's a while ago, that I really started to get into bicycle geometry. And it was because of having to go, I think without having tasted the extremes of each end of the spectrum, you can't find the center. And so I've done extremes. That's how I've been able to form my opinions. And
because the pendulum's swinging the whole way, you get that whole mm-hmm. range of experience.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As an extreme person, I am you understand with you that. There.
I'm on that roller coaster. Okay. I won't go into specifics of the extremes, but you could use your imagination. There's the, you know, bicycle geometry has gone through so many different reworks over the years, and it's one of the few things that you can improve upon. And knowing what you know in modern times, you can improve upon a bicycle's geometry. And what I mean by that is its tire clearances, its tire sizes, wheel sizes, head tube angles, seat tube angles, bottom bracket drop, top tube length, and so forth. You can go and tweak all of these things, and it's not added technology, right? It doesn't automatically make it so you have to have electronic shifting or suspension here or there, or putting zerts inside your frame, or putting a head shock on the front, those awful specialized experiments. You know, you're able to improve your bicycle in ways that you just can't by adding on these tchotchke add-ons. So you're able to improve a bicycle without making it look garish, still maintaining classic lines in some regards. And I just find that to be really cool, because that's basically what I'm after with my own bike company. But it's just a way to improve a bike without making it look modern. You can have a modern bike without looking modern, so to speak. You can use older materials and things like older construction methods. And so, you know, I like, especially where we ride around here, we have a lot of steep climbs. There's very little flat between climbs, if at all. And so we're either going up or down. And so if you live in a place like that, you're going to really benefit from a steeper seat tube angle. And what I mean by that is, like, a traditional seat tube angle, like on a road bike, is like 73 degrees or 72, even 72 and a half. So you go steeper, you know, upwards of 75, you've got with a zero offset seat post, you've got a really nice angle that your body is at when you're on a steep slope. You're already like in a climbing position. Off road, especially, you're getting like really good traction like that. On the road, you're just able to pedal more efficiently and get the power over the pedals. But if you do that, you got to lengthen your top tube because you've just pushed your whole body forward. So you either have to get a longer stem or you have to lengthen your top tube. For me, on most of those bikes, I'm already at like a 120 stem because I have such long torso anyway. So I've got to have a longer top tube. So that's what I look out for on my bikes. I like a longer front center, which is modern. It's what you're seeing a lot of the more modern race bikes, like the S-Works Crux or the Allied Able, things like that. Those have long front centers, slacker head tube angles, so you don't get a bit, you know, your toe overlap, or you have your point of attack. Like, that's another thing to think about, like a head tube angle that's like, you know, like a standard road bike or mountain bike for that matter, just a few years ago, not a few years ago, 15, 20 years ago, vintage mountain bike head tube angles are, you know, in the 80s, they were pretty slack, you know. When I'll say slack, I'll say, you know, 70 degrees or below. And now they, and then in the 90s, everything wanted to be a little bit quicker handling. And so you got, things became a little more compact. You had like 72 degree head tube angle. That changes the bike's handling like immensely. Like wheel flop is something a lot of, I guess if you were to ride your bike and just pay attention to how much input you have to put on the handlebars in order to keep the bike tracking straight, you know, that's something that the geometry dictates fairly well, like something that you can get an input on how things handle. Like just take out your, if you have a mountain bike and if you have a road bike, just take those out and feel the differences between the two, because that's a big extreme difference. It should be if you have modern bikes between the two, and you can see how, oh, this is how a slack head tube angle and this is a, you know, a steep head tube angle. You could feel the differences right there. And a lot of times just kind of cutting the difference from each end, you find a nice middle point. That's what I've been able to do on a lot of my bike designs. And I'm just trying to make my bike comfortable over the long run. So, you know, I'm not like, you know, I don't have a super racy position, but I want to be able to achieve that racy position if I need to, you know, at the end of like a 60 or 70 mile ride. If I'm just trying to get home and it's windy, you know, I'm just trying to put the power into the pedals and get there. I don't know if I'm answering any questions here, but, you know, those
no,
are the,
there's some really good stuff in there as like a beginner bike looker, I guess that's me. No, I think I'm intermediate because I've looked at a lot of bikes, old bikes at like Eroica or something. There's just so much to look at. But I've learned from you, Jenny, that, you know, knowing your own body from what you just said is pretty nice. Like if you have short legs, long torso, short torso, long legs, long arms, like it's just every body is different. And so if you can start with that base of knowing yourself individually and then applying what you know about your body structure to the bike structure, like, okay, how slacked is the head tube angle? Am I going to have enough, you know, clearance so I don't have toe overlap or whatever it is? Mm-hmm. But for me, I tend to look at, from what you've taught me, I tend to look at, you know, the seat tube angle for sure. Mm-hmm. I look at the wheelbase, like I look at like clearance, and definitely the head tube angle.
Yeah.
Like these are all things that you've taught me from like cross racing the two times I did.
Right.
You know, having shorter chainstays makes it a little zippier, you know,
and
like
cross racing, especially, that's a great example is, you know, a lot of people wanted to just make cross bikes their gravel bikes, but cross bikes are designed with high bottom brackets to get over the barriers and steeper head tube angles because the courses are tight, right? You know, you're navigating between really tight lines and trying, and it's not necessarily high speed. Like the faster you're going, the more slack the head tube angle should be. And so it's just going to track better. It's going to be a little bit more jittery if you have a steeper head tube angle. Of course, fork offset factors into all this too, like low trail, high trail, stuff like that. But, you know, that's a little bit more in the weeds. But you know, most fork offsets are like 55, 50 millimeters. You know, it's not huge differences there. But yeah, you know, it's a high bottom bracket is not necessarily a great thing, you know, because it's you're a little bit higher on the bike, you're sitting higher on the bike, you're sitting above the bike, whereas if, you know, a lower bottom bracket drop, you're kind of down riding inside the bike, which I tend to like a lot better. Higher bottom brackets are great for like low speed, like the Cannondale Beast of the East M800 that was out in the 90s. That was like a really high and tight mountain bike designed specifically for riding East Coast trails, which are notoriously just hiking trails that we just have to basically do trials moves on to ride. And so a bike like that works really well in a situation like that. But if you wanted to take that bike off road, if you wanted to take that bike on a trail in like California, Colorado on a high speed single track descent, it's going to be a handful and a half. You're just not going to be able to hook up. You know, I say all this, but it is remarkable how quickly the body does adapt to whatever geometry you have. Like, it's not an end all. You know, if you love a bike, but the geometry's whack, but you're like, it rides great for me. But every time my friend gets on it, he's like, what the fuck is this? Like, it usually takes like a ride or two, but almost every bike can feel like your own if you let it happen.
Yeah, I think that's where I struggle with the geometry stuff, because you know, the first bike that I loved was my 30th birthday bike that you gave me for my birthday, which was the Lugged Specialized Stump Jumper,
1985.
And
yeah.
Mm-hmm. You look at that bike versus like my Lightning Bolt, my Crest Lightning Bolt. It's a completely different bike.
Much different bike. Yeah.
But when I'm riding on it, I'm just like, I'm having such a nice time riding my bike. I can go fast. I can go slow.
I wouldn't concern.
Because I'm never going, I'm never in it for pure performance. I'm in it for pure feeling and therapy. And, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think for me, the fun part about understanding geometry, at this elementary level that I do have, is being like looking at a bike without any of like the wheels set up, just frame and fork. And being able to tell, like, oh, that's a gravel bike, or oh, that's probably a cross bike. That's probably going to be good for the trails out west or out east. Mm-hmm. It is fun being able to see. And then you see the ones that are kind of wacky, like, oh, what is that? That is a very long reach. Like, what is that about? That's just fun to be able to see.
And I would implore everyone to go on bikeinsights.com. It's an exceptional website where you could compare all these different sizes of bikes that people have inputted there. And you could compare like your current bike to maybe a bike that you're curious about. And you could see all the geometry differences. And they'll tell you they'll give you a breakdown of it all. It's super rewarding. I love just messing around on that website. Yeah, that's a great way to understand frame geometry. I mean, would highly recommend bikeinsights.com. Well, we are 1 hour and 24 minutes in here already.
How did that happen?
Yeah. I'm not going to talk about why I'm mad again.
Jeez.
Deferred yet again, folks. And we also have some pro cycling stuff to get into here. So psych on that one. I can't say really quickly, Del Toro, Isaac Del Toro of Mexico, of Baja, Mexico, Baja, California, Mexico.
Ensenada.
Yeah, not even that far from San Diego. This is basically a win for the North American continent.
Turtle Island.
Yeah, Turtle Island here. So I had won the Dauphiné, which is now called something else, but I don't know what it, I can't remember. It's such a stupid thing that they had to rename a classic race like this. But it was a stage race traditionally leading up to the tour. It kind of gives us a glimpse of how everyone's doing. Paul Sexas was in there also. He was favored to win, but he crashed hard the day before the last stage and abandoned the final day. So that was all left to Isaac Del Toro to basically easily win it. Juan Ayuso, who was in the news a lot last year as being, he was on the same team as Del Toro in UAE. He left after being butthurt that they had let Del Toro be like their main guy. And because Del Toro, Ayuso was young, but Del Toro was like 21.
He had a bit of like that reality TV villain arc.
Yes, he did. He still looks at, you see his updated photo. He's mean mugging, like.
All right.
Yeah, but he got
villains.
Yeah,
I
believe he was second on the podium. And then we had an Australian rider, another young Australian rider who was a neo-pro who held the yellow jersey. The yellow jersey is, the Dauphiné is like a pre-Tour de France thing, so they get to wear a yellow jersey too. And so, yeah, this Australian neo-pro, can't remember his name, but he got third. So pretty exciting stuff.
My last question to you, Jenny, is if all of them, if Juan, Isaac, and Paul peed in a bidon and then dumped it out, would you put water in it and drink out of it?
Yeah. It's urine's sterile, folks. And all these bottles that I'm peeing in myself out on the, you know, I think that's what that question was based towards. You know, when we're peeing in our water bottles inside our sleeping bags so we don't want to get up in the cold in the morning. Yeah, we're drinking out of them later. What are we gonna? What else are we going to do with those water bottles?
Can you use I statements, please?
I've seen you do it, whether you know it or not.
Unconsciously, but I guess every water bottle I drink out of has Ron's pee in it.
Or yours, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, a little pee never hurt anyone. If you let it sit around in there for a few days, maybe not. But if it's fresh.
It's pretty gnarly.
If it's fresh.
It's that urea. Yeah.
If it's fresh, no problem.
You drank your own pee before. You said it tastes like green tea.
It tastes like green tea. I'm like one of those people, you know, who would go out on these trips and be proud of running out of water. Your friends are like, we'll just filter some. And I'm like, no, it's okay. I saved my pee. I'm just been sipping that. And they're like, what? And I'm like.
Yeah, that's how you were when we met.
Yeah, that's me.
Your own drink and pee.
Tastes like green tea. Why waste it? So. In the stand, we were going to talk about in the stand in the beginning of each podcast leading forward, but I basically have the same shit in the stand as I did last week, but I can elaborate more on the next episode.
Since we're running out of time here, Jenny, let's save like a newer structure for when we release on Tuesday.
Agreed.
So because of all of the great democratic process feedback we've gotten, the show has been formatted to fit your needs, listeners. And so next Tuesday, we'll introduce a different format to focus less on racing, more on bikes and music and culture and
cults, yeah.
And recipes. People have been asking about recipes.
It's honestly a hard.
He's an incredible cook.
Well, thank you.
And super helpful. And very much a fiber friend. So we'll get into all of that next episode. Let's just wrap this up because there's like a car that's like beeping. There's some work happening here at Forest Park. So it's annoying me. And
you're gonna go meet some OnlyFans in Forest Park?
No.
No. That's got to be, I mean, never confirmed, but that's got to be.
But it's not for me.
It's got to be such a cruising spot. I mean, any wooded place in a city, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The city's hot and so are its residents.
That's true. All right. Well, thank you for calling in and joining me today, sweetheart. It's been wonderful seeing your voice.
I
miss you. And please give Sally my love, Sally of Shovel Research. And enjoy the rest of your time there.
Oh, and support Shovel Research. Yeah. Go buy Shovel Research stuff. They make incredible things. Like the epitome of all punk, I would say.
Yeah, agreed.
Pure nerddom.
Pure nerdery.
You should see her organized drawers. It's amazing. It's amazing. Very soothing for the soul. Oh. Great spending all this time with you, my love.
Likewise, sweetie. Well, folks out there listening in the greater digital world, radio waves of WKY Jelly, we thank you for listening for an hour and 31 minutes. We'll see you next Tuesday.
Yes.
I'm Ronnie Romance.
And I'm Aria in Portland.
Ciao.